This was another lip sync where it's like, please keep your shoes and as much of your clothing on, unless when you take it off, you look better.
Yeah, there should be like a little PSA before they lip sync to that effect. Like, please keep your hands inside the vehicle at all time. If you're going to take off your wig, you better have another one. Like, there should be a little bit of that.
I mean, literally, RuPaul said that. If you didn't, don't take off, it's like, don't take off your wig unless you have another one underneath.
Attention. Calling all whispering hunties. Oh, crrr.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Mijan, a semi-drag race expert charged with the task of talking about queer culture and drag race around the world. We're going to keep it cute, we're going to keep it shady, but always real. So grab a snack, come on back, and let's get into those whispering hunties.
Oh my God, is that Joey Sigona from the Eurovision party all the way from Palm Springs? Welcome to the Hunty House. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Well, how's the weather in Palm Springs? Because we are suffering here in New York. It's like below freezing and, you know, no one wants to go out. It's just miserable.
Well, we've had a couple of kind of cold days. I think the temperature was about 76.
My God. You just must be frigid. Do you have a heater? Do you need a blanket? Do you need me to send you something?
The heat has kicked on. Yeah, the heat has kicked on a couple of times. We're surviving.
Oh my gosh. Well, I pity you, but I also hate you for living in such a lovely, lovely place. So you run, you're one of the founders of this amazing Eurovision party, and you do it all the way from California. How does that work?
I was in New York until about 2020. And, you know, there's a team of us that kind of orchestrate the parties. So I'm relying on some of my friends that are local to kind of do a lot of the legwork, but I do come in 3 or 4 times a year anyhow. So New York is like my forever home. So I'll always be there.
I'm like, what a diva, Jesus. No kidding. But I think that's great. How did it first start? Because I mean, I'm obsessed with Eurovision because from doing this podcast, I met these amazing Eurovision podcasters from Holland, and they have Proukenzeit, which is a wig time. It's a drag race podcast in Dutch. They also have a Eurovision podcast called Ding a Dong a Podcast. So just from like hanging out with them, they showed me Eurovision and I was like, what is this pop sensation? Yeah. So much good music. And this year's Eurovision was just, I thought it was stellar.
Yeah.
Answer my question, but I need to stop talking.
Yeah. You know, I mean, honestly, a party of some kind has been going on in New York for, I think, almost 10 years. New York is lucky enough that we have so many transplants from Europe, expats and whatnot, that there has always been a community of some kind of people that grew up loving Eurovision. Over the years, it's kind of had taken different forms. And I got involved about 5 years ago, and it's in the form that it is now, Eurovision NYC. We just came together as fans and said, we got to create something in New York because it doesn't exist right now. And little by little, we managed to create connections at bars and spaces that we could use. And here we are. Like, you know, now we have a recurring party that we could celebrate Eurovision music all year long.
You know, it's so funny. My friends who run the podcast, they also work as like reporters as well. So they were at Eurovision and we were like live tweeting each other, but it was just through like Instagram messages. Mm-hmm. Between that and my friend who was also at a separate Eurovision party, he also runs a podcast. I had kind of like let Eurovision into my life. I had my favorite songs. I put them on my Spotify playlist. And so I'd be listening to them every day. But I'd never like been in a room with like other people who were like just as into some of these songs. And being a single gal, I was on the apps, met this Irish guy. We were kind of like hitting it off. And then he's like, yeah, I'm going to like a Eurovision party. I was like, a Eurovision party? Eurovision happened? Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is so weird. And then I went to one of your parties and I'm telling you, it felt like I was at Eurovision because they were playing the music video and the live performance kind of like interspliced, which was super cool. Mm-hmm. People were like dancing to it. And all of a sudden I felt like I was high, but I was probably just like drunk off my cocktail. But it was just so much fun. And then there was like a drag queen that was doing a performance. And then apparently there was like a lip sync competition. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to deal with the fact that I'm watching Eurovision live with other people. I just need to have a personal moment. Like, I can't get all involved with the stage nonsense. But I think it's really, really cool. And you and so this party is like really inclusive, right? It's just like anyone that's like into Eurovision. So it's like straight, gay, multicultural.
Yeah, sort of the principles of Eurovision is to celebrate diversity. And we do try to work with queer spaces, but we do have people come from, you know, that are all across the spectrum in terms of gender identity and sexuality. And of course, the great thing that I love is just being around people that are from all different places. If you look at the committee of folks that like I work with to put the parties together, it's so cool. Like somebody's from Turkey, somebody's from Israel, you know, Spain. It's so fun, like to have the true melting pot come together. And I feel like New York is such a good place to celebrate Eurovision because we have a microcosm of Europe in a way in our city. And that's what we're going for. We're going for that effect. If you can't be at Eurovision, come to one of our parties. You'll get some of that love. You'll get some of that energy. And it sounds like you did.
Do you ever do it like on the day of?
So yeah, so we do have a big viewing party on the actual day of, but guess what? None of us that run the party are there because we're all in at the actual Eurovision. So,
like fly there and go?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. That's the other thing you have kind of come to terms with when you meet real fans, they will go year after year after year. You know, I never thought I would go to Israel, but for Eurovision, I'm like, yes, I'm going right now. You know, like I was there. So people go. Even if they've gone the past 5 years, they're still going. It becomes very much a tradition. And it's a place where, very much like our party, like you meet people from all over and you form friendships and you're doing together something that you all love. And it becomes just part of your world.
When is the next one? Because I've been like dying to just step back into that world.
The next one I have on the calendar for sure is April 29th. It's a Friday night.
Okay.
And it's going to be like our kickoff to the actual Eurovision 2022. It's like kind of like before everybody gets on the plane and goes to Italy. We are having one big bash that Friday night, and I'm really looking forward to it because it's great that we get to have the parties all year long, but there's something about right before the contest when all the songs are still very new and the excitement of what's going to happen is very much in the air. That makes it extra special. And so I'm really looking forward to that party.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's in Italy. That makes me want to go. I love Italy. That just sounds amazing. Now, question, what was your favorite song from Eurovision from this past year?
I could not stop playing Mata Hari, the entry from Azerbaijan.
Oh, yeah. Mata Hari.
That's right, yes. Yeah. But I feel like I would have given my votes to Italy anyhow.
Really?
I felt like Mata Hari was like a little bit of a guilty pleasure. Like I was addicted to it, but I felt like Italy's Maneskin like was just the best musical entry that we got in 2021.
Wow. I mean, they really are. It was weird because like I'm such a pop lover that like I think they were cool, but I was like, they weren't like as high on my list. I was just like, oh, there's that rock song, like blah blah blah. But you're right, they were cool, they were sexy, they were wearing heels, and then people there's that weird controversy where they thought they were doing drugs and
yeah,
like, no, we would never do that.
I don't know if you noticed, but on the grand finale that night, Damiano, like at the end of the song, did this death drop that like definitely gave me RuPaul's Drag Race like lip sync.
You know, he can pole dance, right?
Yeah.
He's queering it up. I don't know what his situation is, but he's bringing that sexiness to rock and roll where it's like genderless and like sexy.
Exactly.
And it can be transgressive. And that's what I think that was really cool. And it was such a queer Eurovision too.
That's an oxymoron, but okay.
No, I was just saying like, you know, because not all of Europe is like as friendly to all of those identities, but it was really cool to see that on Eurovision, it's a lot more of a welcoming place.
Yeah. That's the intention. It's worth noting, like the Eurovision winners that we've seen, like it's not really about just the song, as you know, and it's not even just about the song and the staging. Those songs that can like tack on to a movement that's already happening seem to be the ones that do the best. With Italy, like this whole idea of rock coming back, this genderless expression and fashion. It kind of tapped into like maybe what a lot of people were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the song elevated that, but I think it really connected with the mood of the fans as well. Yeah. And something else that was already going on.
There was something very authentic about it. And that's what was really cool. Like they did it in Italian and in rock in a very like, it's pop music, but its own thing. There was a lot of formulaic pop music, like that Sugar song, like Give Me Some Sugar. And it's like, you know, and then a lot of people were not singing in their own languages. It just kind of felt like a general song. And, you know, it didn't seem like it was
absolutely
from anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, and some of the ones that I think I enjoyed the best were the ones in their own language. And even if I don't understand everything, I still understand specificity. So you live in Palm Springs, and one of the things that we like to focus on this podcast are safe queer spaces that people enjoy and that people may not know about. So In Palm Springs, what's a safe, fun, guilty pleasure, safe queer space that people might not know about?
People will probably know about it because there's not that many.
In Palm Springs, besides like every vacation house?
Well, yeah, right. I mean, like, but in terms of like bars and clubs, like there's not like a ton. The places on Arenas do a great job of trying to like include everyone. But I think the one that does probably the most in that vein is Chill Bar.
Chill Bar.
Yeah, Chill Bar.
Is it a chill bar?
It hasn't really been that chill when I've been in that. I think they're trying to cool you off from the hot days, but
okay.
They do a lot of good programming, all different types of music, and trying to have all different types of avenues expressed there.
It's a mixed bar?
Palm Springs is difficult when it comes to being mixed because the population is just slanted in, you know. I think it's something that I think the city is really trying to change in terms of the image and the welcoming part of it. You know, our last Pride, the theme was called You Are Included. It must have felt like over the years, this is just a place for gay men.
Mm-hmm. When you say it's just a place for gay men, so like gay women were not as welcome, or trans people, or gender non-binary?
Right. The population, the disposition of the population is older,
gay men,
whiter, and more men. Even if you have a big event, people might be like, I don't want to go there. That's all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're trying to change that image. And I did see it. Like I feel like, especially at Pride, There was a moment where people would on stage, I forget who was on stage, but they like were like, yell if you're, you know, trans, if you're, you know, like, and just like trying to like show that there were all folks there.
Oh, I like that term, folks.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like corporate speak for me, but it works.
I do think that there's a movement happening. Not everyone's hopped onto it yet. And I think it's part of like what happened over conversations that kind of happened over the pandemic as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also just a general trend that some bars and places where people throw parties are becoming more aware of not just having like a gay men, cis men's party, and
right.
having like a queer space where everyone's welcome. And the places that are doing it, that are really, really consciously doing it, are actually creating some of the most fun experiences where
right.
you walk in, it's diverse, and it's less aggressive and more welcoming.
Yeah.
And then you like make friends as well as like flirt with people. And I think that's like, that gives me hope.
Yeah. I mean, in New York, I'm very happy that I'm seeing a lot of places do that. And certainly those are the ones we want to work with for the party. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's great when people just feel like they're free to be themselves. They're more open to others when they walk into a place like that. So you're creating a better social dynamic for everyone, for sure.
Absolutely. And I, honestly, personally, I just want more lesbians in my life. And because, I mean, I'm emotionally a lesbian. Like, I'll meet a guy and I'm like, I love you. Like, marry me. Let's have babies. But, you know, I'm still a gay man. But, you know, and it's really funny. I like... the Good Judy and
Come On Everybody. Yep.
Have been having these amazing parties, and every time
I
go, I'm like, oh my God, this is the bar that I wanted to go to for all these years of living in New York. Why did you only happen now?
This is so awkward. Hey there, Robo fans and Dino fans. Do you like science fiction? Do you like movies about robots and dinosaurs? Do you like podcasts that explore sci-fi philosophy through a fun and positive lens? Then you are going to love Robots vs. Dinosaurs. Every week, your host, Louis G, invites a guest onto the show to talk about one of their favorite sci-fi movies. It's a RoboCast. It's a DinoCast. It's a battle for ultimate awesomeness in science fiction pop culture. Subscribe to Robots vs. Dinosaurs on Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes every Friday. Follow us on Instagram at RobosBDinos or Twitter at VersusRobots. That is at VSRobots.
Hello there. Ever wonder if you're using the right service? Tooltip is a website that helps you find the right tools 10 times faster. And now it has a podcast called Tooltip Time. We're your hosts, Mijan Zulu and Jude Brewer. Join us as we're tasked to explore different tools and, warning, sometimes things may get weird, but we'll always let you know the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our first season is about a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. Podcasting. We are two people from the industry that are committed to finding the stuff that actually works so that you can make the best decision for you, your project, or your business. See you on Wednesday for Tooltip Time. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about the drag race because...
Yes.
We have two now, and we're about to get a third one.
I know.
And I'm about to hit my limit, like the number of drag performances that I can actually watch, the number of like images that I can watch. Have you been watching season four?
I have, absolutely.
What are your thoughts?
I'm like you. I'm reaching a little bit of critical mass with the, you know, the intake. It's fun to have so much drag race in our lives. And like, I think Michelle recently said this, like, we have to celebrate it. It's not going to be like this always. It wasn't always like this. So it's just great to see RuPaul cranking out all the material. But I do feel like just a general comment would be, it feels a little rushed in the production aspect, just from the way the contestants must be vetted. Like, it just feels like because we're going through so many seasons, I don't know if we're getting like the most edgy, interesting folks like coming to the show than compared to maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, the casting is they're casting like very young queens. Mm-hmm. And like they almost look like queens we've seen before, or right, look like each other. So for instance, I was listening to Race Chaser and they literally confirmed all of my suspicions. Bosco and Orion Story, sometimes I can't tell them apart when they like come onto the runway. And Bosco's just smart because she does this thing with her eyebrows where they're kind of pointy. And if she didn't do that, sometimes I'm confused.
Yep.
But like, you know, Orion's story has this kind of like one note vocal fry, like, you know, thing going on. So that's really pulling her apart, not in a good way. But yeah. And I don't know what's going on with the casting. Obviously, UK versus the world debuted this week as well. And it's so funny watching the seasoned queens versus the season 14 queens.
Yeah.
It's just like unfair because the sass is just, it's like cranked up. They know who they are. Their fashion is elevated. I mean, obviously their budgets are bigger, but I don't think you need a big budget to be a sickening queen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's all about the moxie and the life experience. Like, if they're coming and performing after being on tour and having their Instagram blow up and do all these shows as a RuPaul girl, it's so much better television right now than kind of like the amateur hour version. But it's a means to an end, I guess. I feel like that's why we enjoyed All Stars last summer. Even people who didn't place so high in their seasons were coming back as really
good queens.
Right.
It was like, when they put the cast list out, I was like, these people?
Right,
really?
Right.
Did no one sign up? And then it started and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Sonique and Raja are sitting now. Like, let's hop on this train. What did you think of the bottoming challenge?
I was just focused on Maddie the whole time. I'm a Drag Race fan, right? I've been watching these mini challenges for how many seasons now? Mm-hmm. The shock value is completely lost on me. So as funny as it is to like hear a bottoming challenge on VH1, like it doesn't matter anymore. Like I live in Palm Springs. Like that's like... So, but for me, I was like, I want to know more about this Natty. Like, how is she going to deal with this situation?
Oh my God.
And I am fascinated by her body language throughout the whole thing because I really do still feel like she's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess I would be too.
Well, I mean, I think it's really funny that Natty got to pop her cherry. Now she can say she's topped. I also think it's funny that Deja and Gorgeous just could not top these men's. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. And honestly, I've never seen so many bottoms top people that, like, look like tops. Like, it was very, like, power bottom energy. I think that's what they were celebrating. I'm not so sure how they write the contracts for these pit crew guys, because it's like, it's one thing to be objectified, but literally they were being touched at work in an inappropriate place. So like, you know, the sexual harassment like clauses must be like very ironclad.
Yeah, I think they probably are. You're right.
So then we have this like wonderful thing, and then they invite these, you know, these queens that were the first to leave.
Yes, that I actually really like that. I mean, that was the first time they did something like that formally. I can't remember ever seeing that before, but I love that. Like, just to your point, like seeing them come back even out now, like in not in a competition, just for guest starring. It's just like you see, like you could immediately see that there's been development. Mm-hmm. And it's, I love that their names stay in the conversation. Like they're part, mm-hmm. there was an ode to them like last season, right? With the pork chop doc and like,
yeah, the loading right? doc.
Like,
yeah.
So like, I love that because it sucks to probably have to be the one that goes home first.
I thought it was so cute. And then what's really nice is you can still see that those queens are still somehow more confident than the queens that are on the show.
Exactly.
They've lived. And I always want to tell this to anyone that's like auditioning for the show. Don't audition to the show if you don't feel like you've lived. You know, you need to,
right.
I mean, this is why New York is such a great breeding ground for drag, is that people will start like in their local bar and then they'll get a gig, let's say like not just in Brooklyn, but also in Manhattan. And then, you know, they'll be going back and forth. So they're like full-time performers. And that really helps to get those juices flowing, you know, and to get that like grit, you know, that New York grit. And I think that's why we pump out some good queens, but there are some individuals that come from other places. And I will acknowledge that too, but I'm very, very partial to the New York drag experience.
But we skipped over the other big item in the first part of the show.
What was that?
Cornbread.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. Yeah. Cornbread taken out by an injury. Like, and also there's a conspiracy. Do you notice that like the people that get injured on Drag Race are always the curvy queens?
That's a conspiracy, or is that like just physics?
The shade. No, I just kind of feel like they need to like do more work to make sure that like everyone is safe.
I feel like it's extremely frustrating to see this come up multiple times now. And I don't know if it's on the contestants' end to be like, are you going to be putting a lot of stress on your body? Like, are you able to do this? Or if it's productions.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure if you were going on Survivor, they would require like a full physical and everything. Like, I mean, maybe Drag Race needs to do a little bit more of that, because I mean, it's kind of bad for the franchise that there's people constantly getting injured.
Well, yeah.
Within the first few weeks of the show.
Eureka, Victoria Scone.
Right.
There was a drag queen from Canada that like jumped into a pit and then injured her knee.
Right.
And I was like, everyone else was fine. Ocean Aqua Black, thank you.
Yes.
And I was like, they didn't test that pit for someone her size, because clearly she wouldn't have hit her knee.
And now, you know, the next time it comes on, I'm going to be so nervous watching it, being like, all right, who's going to break their knee this time?
Like, you literally. Wow. And the funniest thing was, Cornbread has this solidity to who she is. So to lose her this early is just, it's so tragic.
Yeah.
I really thought it was going to be Cornbread, Willow Pill, and then maybe like Angeria or...
Maybe Angeria? Come on.
No, I mean, I think she's doing really good. I was just saying that, you know, when it comes to like a top three, it's always like, you know, someone's fighting for that third spot. Even if I think Nigeria's doing amazing, there are a couple other queens that are like, you know, poking up now. And it literally has changed the season for me.
Sure,
like everyone
sure.
else is now way more interesting now that Cornbread's left the room, because it was That's a Cornbread true. Show up until
it
now.
It was. You're right. Yes.
And then what was so weird is like she really hid that injury, because the day before when they were filming, she didn't mention anything about falling. It's like they had to like go back and record her to explain what happened.
Right. Yeah. I thought that was weird. And like she couldn't even get to the studio. She was like in a hotel room. Like I was worried about that too.
In order for that to have happened, they walk into the workroom and they're like, where's Cornbread? But like, wouldn't they all have known? Because they have to come from the hotel together.
Yeah.
Of all the things that didn't happen, this didn't happen the most. They knew she wasn't there. You know, like you'd get out of the van, you'd get all your mics and blah, 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 and then you arrive. I don't think that was real. But, you know, it happens. Now, the runway was Spring Has Sprung. And I just kind of felt like it was very, like, general. And I think what happens when this happens is that, like, everyone's interpretation of it, like, it just wasn't strong. Like, Georges looked like she was going to a quinceañera, and, like, Carrie did ugly, and it was ugly. You know, Anjera did look good. I mean, but Anjera looks like she's a pageant queen, so, like, you know, you get it.
What about Deja Sky's outfit?
I wasn't living. I was not. But Maddie's rainstorm cloud was, like, amazing. And I think Maddie's creativity is really starting to come out here. Like Maddie likes to go big or go home. And I think I'm feeling that. Jasmine was just like a showgirl again. I'm like, you need to diversify your wardrobe. You can't just wear like showgirl pageant in every runway. Orion looked Orion. Willow was like, okay, out of the box, love it. Diabetti was, there wasn't a lot there, but it was, for me, it was like when Bosco came out in a gorgeous dress and then transformed it into another gorgeous dress, I was like, this is drag. And this is why I've been cheering Bosco for all this time. Like, I do think that she's almost like a diamond in the rough. And she's like, now that Cornbread's gone, like people are, it's leaving room for someone like Bosco to start to like.
Absolutely. I definitely think this episode gave her a big boost.
What was your thoughts on the bunny outfit?
So the bunny is Orion, right?
Oh, wait, there were two bunnies. I thought that Deja did a bunny thing.
I don't. Deja was like just in these clothes that were, just didn't fit her. It was like a big blue and gold thing, wasn't it?
I'm gonna refer to Instagram for a ruling. Oh, she didn't post it. Wow, she must have really not liked her outfit.
Oh yeah, no, I mean you're right. Maybe I think it was a loose interpretation of a bunny, but yeah, it just didn't fit her very well. That's the only thing I could remember, was that the fit was really off.
And she's a seamstress.
Yeah, but I actually loved Orion as a bunny. I feel like Orion, she's showing me a little softer side of her than when she first was on and when she went home the first week. And I kind of liked watching that. The thing with her is she needs to edit like more. And I think this episode showed that she just couldn't do that.
Yeah. I think Orion just needs more time. Like it's not fully cooked. Deja was just wearing like a bunny face mask basically. And then like clothes.
In, oh, like, right. Pastel. Right.
That's what it was. And what did Orion wear?
Orion was a bunny, right? Like she.
Oh, I did not like this outfit because it was a Playboy thing. So she's basically wearing underwear. And then she had, so the way that the underwear worked was that there was a triangle and the outline had fur. And it was so thick, it made it look like she had a really meaty tuck, which she didn't. But like, you know, I feel like that was unintentional. And I was like, well, that took it down for me. And then Diabetti, what happened with her was like, it was a beautiful outfit, but again, like the fit was like kind of weird. So like, it wasn't, you know, Diabetti's so tall that like, if she had more, you know, you can give the illusion that you look skinnier by having like triangles.
Proportionizing?
By proportionizing? Yes. And so there was so much fabric that it was kind of like a blob. And if she had just had like a, if the design of how they, you know, put the strings in it, had just created that kind of illusion, it would have elongated Diabetti's body, in my opinion. I don't know. You know, what do I know? But but Orion's story, I don't know. I think she needs to change the makeup because her face always looks like we're waiting for something to happen. So if she had more like aggressive makeup, because like the thing, like Diabetti, right, has a really kind of like boy next door kind of face, right? Mm-hmm. But does dramatic eye makeup, and it kind of gives her face like a point of view. But also, I think Lady Camden's teacup falling out was
fun.
It was Christmas. It was good drag, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what we're waiting for.
Absolutely. And what did you think about the first eliminated queens being able to walk the runway?
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone like updated their looks, but Kimora showed us why we loved her. Like, she came out in a Mackie dress looking like phenomenal. And, you know, it's like she may have gone home first, but no one is going to forget a Kimora Hall fashion moment. And I'm going to be there for it every time. James Manfield looks great. And then Tempest Azure, I just was like confused by what she was wearing, but it was nice to see her walk on the runway.
I was just nervous for a minute. I was like, I don't know if there's any twists with these girls being here. And now that Cornbread's gone, like, I was just worried. I was like, so I think it was good to have them there. But I, you know, sometimes as a fan, I'm just always trying to outguess RuPaul with all of the twists and turns.
Well, I think the funniest thing is like the audacity of RuPaul to let Cornbread go, to have like another lip sync and then not to save the queen. it's like, no, we don't want to keep you. Like, please go home.
I was thinking the same exact thing. I'm like, okay, this is a great excuse for a double save, but nope.
And then I know that, like, I'm getting older and, you know, I'm not always keeping up with the Joneses. And so I didn't actually know who Ava Max was. I mean, I think it's a sign. Things are changing. You know, in the queer spaces that I go to, there's a lot of, like, throwbacks and, like, mixes. So you aren't necessarily listening to, like, all the new music.
Yeah.
And I don't watch music videos anymore. So, like, I was like, who is this woman on the show? Even like the drag queens weren't like, oh my God, it's Ava. Like, oh my God, I love you.
Right,
like,
right. Well, in their defense, like they got to talk to J-Lo last week, you know? Like,
yeah. So. And I do like the song, even though I was looking up the song and it's like the most covered song. So even the original like la, 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 la,
right.
Like that sample was a sample.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was like, so it's like, it's a sample of a sample of a sample. This Ava Max is a singer-songwriter, but I was like, you're singing like someone else's song to basically the track that the original song was written to, and then you just made up like a chorus, right? So it's like, okay, wah, wah. I do like her point of view as a singer, but this was another lip sync where it's like, please keep your shoes and as much of your clothing on, unless when you take it off, you look better.
Yeah, there should be like a little PSA before they lip sync to that effect. Like, please keep your hands inside the vehicle at all time. If you're going to take off your wig, you better have another one. Like, there should be a little bit of that.
I mean, literally, RuPaul said that. If you didn't, don't take off your wig unless you have another one underneath. Look, when Georges took off her outfit and then she had the padding was done so well that was like perfectly smooth. Like, I was like, this is cute, right? So it's like, it wasn't a reveal, but it was still like, the outfit looks cute. The drag is check. But like Ryan, like from the gate, like the bunny ears fall off. And then we're like, okay, what? Then they do the split and then something happened. Maybe she broke her heel or something. But I would still, for the life of me, just tiptoe my way until the end of the song and then be like, fierce, you know, like. Apparently, like one time Beyonce was at the Oscars, her shoe broke and she just tiptoed like, because like she was walking down the stair, her shoe broke. She just tiptoed until she got off stage.
And that's how you do it.
Yeah. Ask yourself, what would Beyonce do? Did you watch UK versus the World?
I did. I really enjoyed it. Like there wasn't like moments where I was bored or like multitasking the way it happens when I watch season 14. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's because I know I'm already familiar with all those queens, but I loved it.
Me too. It was so funny because, you know, I watched Janie Jacquet, you know, in Dutch basically.
Right.
And seeing her like fully fluent in English was just like, oh wow, like there's so much more of Janie that I could have been like, you know, digesting. But I love all of these queens. Like anytime Lemon's on screen, she just sucks all the air out of the room. And she's just so funny and she sounds like a cartoon. I've never watched Thailand, but Pangea is sexy. Like I was like, wow, this is a beautiful in drag, but also very cute out of drag. So mm-hmm. there's like a lot of trade on this season. And then Blue is hilarious. And Monique Hart is another one of those queens that just, she's just so unapologetically herself that like it's.
She's just good TV. No, there's nothing you can say bad about her.
I know.
Like she, like I would listen to her recite the phone book basically.
Everyone was like being so chummy, but when the American queens came onto the yeah. stage, it was like, look, honey, like some people came here to do drag. We came here to win.
Well, Monique, maybe, but I don't know if Jujubee came to win.
Oh, you know, Jujubee's most recent All-Stars run was one of her best moments on any of the franchises that she's now a member of. There's a hilarious photo of her, you know how like Avengers Infinity War or whatever, Infinity Saga, and they have that like gauntlet?
Yeah.
There's an amazing photo of like all the drag races on the gauntlet and that Jujubee just being like, I will get them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jujubee's is turning out kind of like pedestrian looks right now.
Yes. Oh my God. It's like there's time has not passed since season two with some of those looks.
I know. And you know what? But I do have to say, she probably like threw a big chunk of money at that All-Stars run. She was wearing a lot of expensive things.
Well, let's keep it 100. Like Juju is there because she probably was filming the Queens of the Universe in London. Right. And they were just like, all right, like, let's have her on. Like, I just feel like she's just a little overexposed in the franchise and with the series back to back. Like,
I'm confused about the chronology. When they were on the show, the number of like RuPaul's franchises that they say that she's a member of, it doesn't seem like they're aware that she's in Queens of the Universe.
That makes sense. Because I think in my mind, at least, like the filming happened very close to one another because
yeah.
I believe both of them were filmed in the UK.
Yes. Yes, they were. And the funny part is like Graham Norton's like the host of Queen of the Universe and he's on the show. And then so is Michelle Visage. And so the only difference is that like Rue is just like doing a switcheroo.
Yeah. And then Jujubee showing up singing.
But, you know, the funniest thing about this talent show was that like literally everyone was either lip syncing or singing along to their track. It's like, we need to get some new talents, ladies and gents.
Or just rebrand it as like, okay, you brought your new single here. Let's perform it. And that's the challenge. And then have a talent show separately from that.
I know. And then like, honestly, I think that Monique Hart is singing the way that Rue thinks that Rue can sing. Do you know what I mean? Because that song's kind of fly. And then Jimbo's performance was so strange and so wild and so Jimbo. And I do feel like in Canada, because their perception of drag on Jimbo's season was more of like a pageanty kind of point of view, I don't think that they could really appreciate Jimbo's weirdness. But I do think that RuPaul and Michelle Visage would definitely, like, they see 520 queens, you know, over the freaking franchises. And I do think that, like, someone like Jimbo is definitely going to stick out for them as, like, a unique artist. And they like to push that.
Yeah. And I think they're in the best position to say, like, we're going to elevate this form of drag because not much of it being represented across the franchise.
I know.
That's the drag that we sort of all grew up with, at least, you know, that's what I've thought drag queens were kind of. That was their stick, you know, for so long. Now we're seeing a lot of different types of drag and there's maybe less focused on the performance art part of it and more on the look.
Yeah.
I do sense that Rue is recentering the conversation because if you look at this, like me, I'm not looking at it in isolation. I'm watching how Rue is reacting to Willow in the same way they're reacting to Jimbo. And it's not an accident, right?
So. Yeah. Both of these examples of drag are like the drag that like I live for in Brooklyn. Like when, you know, the song starts and you're like, what the hell is going on? I don't know what she's doing.
Yes.
There's something scary about it, but it's also just fabulous. And sometimes they do something and sometimes they don't. Like, so I go to this like amateur drag night on Mondays that's run by Madeline Hatter.
Is that in $3 bill?
No, it's at Metropolitan.
Oh, okay.
So there was this one time where this queen came out and she was doing like an acoustic version of I think it was like, you've got the love. And so she started and she just sat and served it. But the way she did it, her body, like the energy was just perfect. Then it flipped into like an up-tempo version. And then she was just all around. She threw the chair. She like took off some of her clothes and it was just wild and crazy. And I was like, this is what I came to see. She didn't do a split. She just did her. Mm. It scares you, but it entices you. And I think that even Pangea did it, right? Mm. Pangea's face while she was doing her performance was wild. You know, there was like an animal quality to it. And I think that's what made her so interesting to watch.
Mm.
Yeah, she was doing splits, but she was doing splits and like almost like daring you. And I haven't watched Thailand's Drag Race, but what I do remember from all the clips that I've seen are these queens have a fire about them when they perform. And that's what makes Thailand like so specific, right? Because it's not, I mean, they have their budgets, but they're not dealing with the same sort of budgets that some of these other queens are dealing with in Holland or the US. But that performance is the number one thing. So even Pangea, I think she did a Trojan horse when she was like, I'm so intimidated, and you know, I haven't really performed, you know, like blah, 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 da, 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 da. I was like, okay, you haven't performed, but you can do a split and like lift your leg up above your head. Your looks are all right. I was like, girl, you're just being nice so that when you win, you're like, huh.
Right, right.
Do you think that Jimbo lost on purpose?
You know, that thought definitely went through my mind. But I also know that from watching Canada's Drag Race, like, Jimbo is not a lip-sync assassin, right?
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But I guess we will find out, right? Like, who Jimbo chose to go home, usually that.
Oh, yeah, because they reveal the lipsticks after.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jimbo may do a Bibi Zahara Benet where you're like, I'm not telling.
Oh, right. I don't know. It's interesting to see how the Canadian queens, you know, react to this fierce competition, right? Because I feel like their season was, you know, a little bit very, very kumbaya, very friendly. And I think, you know, people in the UK and the US at least have been maybe more tuned into All Stars or more ready for it.
It was interesting to hear Lemon say, yeah, Jimbo does not like me.
Right, right.
And I do get that, but I think it's really, Jimbo is very much Jimbo, right? Jimbo's not going to be fake, right? But I do think that Lemon reminds me of that popular girl who's popular because she's able to be like, pick the popular people and then stick with them, right? Mm. So like, she's very good at like making herself the center of the story and making a case for herself. And sometimes almost even when she doesn't have like a lot to offer in certain categories, usually in the fashion category. Tons of personality, can dance, boots the house down, is super funny, gives us great talking head, but she will sell us an outfit talking about how gorgeous it is, and it is not that great. If I were Jimbo, I would have lost that lip sync and been like, oh, see, I didn't hurt my Canadian sister.
I'm thinking too, like, what isn't part of that lip sync? Like, if you win, you get something. Like, so like, I feel like the incentive is maybe not there to win that lip sync, like the way it is, like, okay, you're going to get a $10,000 tip.
Yeah.
So you still have to vote somebody out, but at least you get something out of it. Like without the money in play, I feel like the whole scheme feels not fully formed.
Yeah. It's literally just a badge.
Right.
These goddamn badges. I just think it's like, I don't know. They need to figure out this money situation because Queen of the Universe gets money.
A lot.
$200,000. Like, that's
crazy.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Maybe just they can monetize it better because, like, I guess if they write all the songs, then, like, the songs might get residuals or something. So Queen of the Universe gets
$200,000.
UK versus the world.
I feel like it goes back to the broadcaster.
It is true that the excuse that they put, because it's like taxpayers' money to like make the show since it's part of the BBC.
Okay.
But, you know, they do have like the option to do that. There are some shows in the UK that have like prize awards. And, you know, RuPaul could choose to move from the BBC to like Sky TV or whatever and probably get around that situation.
Right.
I just don't think they have yet. I think we deserve to pay these queens. And I guess the idea is that, like, you know, even if they don't get money from the show when they travel, the opportunities, the sponsorships will all come. And I do think that that has happened, but I'm sure it doesn't happen equally and not for everyone, right? So for every franchise, they're like probably like 50% of them who really make out big. And then the other 50% kind of just, they get a boost as performers, but, you know, they shouldn't necessarily quit 100% of their day job.
Right. Let's break it down, though. If you're from the UK or you're from Holland, going on this show was a no-brainer because you're getting tons of exposure right in Europe, right? Mm-hmm. Canada, they never got to meet RuPaul. So, I mean, I think a lot of them would say yes to this immediately.
Well, yeah, of course. And I mean, also, like, even Holland didn't get to meet RuPaul. So it's
right,
like,
exactly, right. Yeah. So that, I get all that. Mm-hmm. The US girls, it feels like Jujubee was probably there anyway, competing for the $250,000. And they managed to, like, reel in Monique. So I don't know if you were a US girl, like, why this would be appealing.
I know, because it's like they've done it before. And I mean, and also, like, both of the American girls were already on All Stars. So they brought in like heavy hitters. I think for some of the new franchises that they're starting, they like to bring in a queen who they know that all the fans will love, just to like give attention to the show. And I think that's what BB. I think that's the contract that Jujubee signs. Like she might not win at this point, but they're like, girl, we're gonna give you 5 episodes,
yeah,
and maybe a little budget for your outfit, but just come on. And potentially, maybe some people in Europe don't know about Jujubee. I don't know how that would be possible at this point, but like. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the case. Oh my gosh. Anyway, so we'll see what happens. I do like that we kept Janie Jacquet instead of Lemon, so that we still have like one from each country. And I think Lemon will slay another day. I think she's a very talented personality, and I would not be surprised if we hear from her again.
Absolutely.
So Joey, on the podcast, we love it when people can fervently, consensually, and passionately celebrate you and all of your endeavors as much as possible. So where can people find you, stalk you, lift you up in a consensual manner online?
Well, so I would love for people to follow the Instagram of Eurovision NYC. Mm-hmm. That's for the parties in New York. However, I also contribute fan media on ESC Plus. So that's ESC-plus on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing for YouTube, because I contribute fan media from my Eurovision circles.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So what do you mean by contribute fan media?
So I usually attend a lot of the pre-Eurovision or Eurovision itself events as media.
Yes. Oh my God.
So if you want to see me talking to Daddy Frore or like a bunch of people, like, you can go to the YouTube channel and check that out. I'm part of a team based in Spain that puts fan media together. And we've been really lucky. We've been accredited as press in a lot of events, and
got
to meet a lot of the artists. And I did a ton of interviews that year. And the artists are really welcoming. They really, especially when I say that I'm like an American or from New York, like they really want to kind of talk to someone who's outside of the immediate area.
Oh my God, I'm living. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
I had a great time.
Thank you for what you do. Thank you for bringing Eurovision to America, because we're all crazy. Once we get the American Song Contest going, hopefully we'll really understand how it really brings Europe together, and I think hopefully heal some wounds. And please stay well, keep your hubby safe, enjoy that warm weather, and hopefully we'll see you a little soon. But until next week, guys, bye.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast you just heard.